the minute I spoke to Phoebe, I was like, oh my gosh, like Emil just like had a kid yesterday, but I wonder if he's like podcasting.
You know, for you, Chris, and for Phoebe, anything.
Hey there, listeners, future callers, and cooking enthusiasts. This is Dinner SOS, the show where we help you save dinner or whatever you're cooking. I'm Chris Morocco, food director of Bon Appetit and Epicurious. Our caller this week, Phoebe, advises high school students at a boarding school in rural Indiana.
I am so attached to my students this year already, specifically to my seniors.
She's really disappointed to be missing her students' official send-off, but she has a plan to say goodbye in an even more personal way.
I thought that it would be really fun to have a picnic for them, but I don't know how to make food for 25 people. That is sort of the essence of the problem. And I've been asked multiple times why I don't just have it catered, but we live in a very small town and the restaurants there, the students, I think, have probably eaten there more than they've eaten at their homes.
Yeah.
So they are kind of sick of that. And of course, other than that, we're in the dining hall. There's a group of students. We have a lot of international students, and a group of Chinese students in particular pulls their money every weekend to pay a $250 delivery fee to have authentic Chinese food delivered from Chicago.
Wow.
So that is like, when one of my students told me that he was a part of that group, it really, I guess, got me thinking about like the kids crave these home-cooked meals and things that are just made with love. And that is what I want to give to them. And I guess why I'm being so dogged about taking on this task.
That is amazing. I mean, I love that like you're really kind of going out of your way here, you know, to
yes.
kind of scale up your natural sort of inclination to take care of people through food, but like just kind of adding a zero.
Right. Yes.
So what scares you in terms of like this specific exercise? Is it simply like the scale? Is it a limitation in your kitchen? Is it like how you even transport things? Like, where does the fear come from?
It's definitely the scale. I don't think my brain comprehends the amount of food that I would need to make for 20 plus people. And so I feel that I can do it and that I want to do it, but I just, okay, I can make a salad for however many people. I can make a dessert for, you know, you pull a bus up and I'll have dessert ready for them. But I would say a main dish and a side dish are what make me nervous, just sort of like wide appeal and something that, you know, I could make multiple batches of if needed, because I would be cooking for 20 some teenagers and would love for them to love it.
And do you feel like you need like one headlining starring dish, or like how many dishes, like how far are you willing to go here?
Yeah, I think I'd like a nice spread, definitely something with protein as not necessarily a headline, but as a focal point on the plate. And then obviously I'll have the typical chips, drinks, salad, crunchy things. But yes, I really feel like maybe something protein-based and then maybe another sort of hearty pasta dish perhaps that doesn't include meat.
Okay. Food that travels is a whole thing. You know what I mean? Like, and like the second you leave your house with food, like anything can happen.
Right.
Suddenly it's like, well, how are you packaging the thing? Like, what are you trying to transport warm versus the things that you're just better off keeping room temp?
Right.
You know, it's like you're not a caterer, right?
So I am not, yeah.
So to try to kind of like recreate the things that caterers have at their disposal in terms of where they're cooking and how they're transporting things or heating things up on site.
Right.
It's like a whole other thing. In terms of your kitchen space, any limitations there? Is this like a just regular kitchen, no holds barred kind of situation?
Yeah, I'd say so. And where I'm envisioning the picnic, it's like a 1 minute drive down the road from where I live. So, you know, I've just been picturing like those huge aluminum like trays of things. And so I'm, you know, if we were to heat something up in the oven and take it right over, like we could hold some heat there if I got my timing down. So, but no, my kitchen is space-wise, pretty large, pretty well equipped. I have, you know, just a typical oven and stovetop, typical fridge, nothing too crazy or industrial is probably the main, the main thing I do not have in this challenge.
Okay. And in terms of access to ingredients, like what does your local shopping situation look like?
So within a 5-minute drive, not great. Within a 25-minute drive, pretty fine. And within like a 45-minute drive, I have like the Whole Foods, there's a Trader Joe's.
Okay. Well, this is all super helpful background because there's like, there's just feeding people, right? And from a technical standpoint, like that would make this a successful exercise, right? Did everybody get enough calories to like walk away and make
Are you going to be hungry tonight? Or do we need to order pizza?
Right. You know, like that in itself is like a certain type of success, but letting people see like maybe a side of you that they might not know, right?
Yeah.
Or feeding people something that is meaningful to you that allows you to express some part of yourself to them.
Yeah.
You know, not to get too heady about it or anything.
Right.
But like that's cool too.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I think maybe a better way to express it is instead of trying to think of one dish is like my mom has been a huge influence on how I cook, obviously. And I always watched her kind of do a dance where my dad would be out at the grill and then she would be making sides. And so probably like thinking about when I've fed people and felt the most fulfilled in doing that, it's like not getting too into the weeds with any one portion, but just having like a well-rounded plate with like some greens, some meat, some starch, you know, just something that satisfies and making sure that I make each one of those components like really good.
That's really cool. That's super helpful actually. Cause I think like, yeah, having a, the word that's coming to mind is a panoply, but whatever, we'll go with it. You know, multiple kind of elements so that like, you know, you're not lost in the weeds of, oh, you spent 6 hours doing this like one thing that everything kind of hinges on.
And then maybe it doesn't turn out the best.
Yeah. For what it's worth, like this is the kind of thing that would stress me out.
Oh.
Like, but I don't mean that in a bad way. It's like this, all I want to say is like, this would be a challenge for anybody. Just in terms of like the scale and taking food to go. But, you know, it's like, hey, a movable feast, here we go.
Yes.
And like, we're here to support you and figure it out together. And it's going to be so great.
I have to say, when I thought I want to do this on my own, that thought was coupled with, well, I have to talk to Chris and the podcast because they can help me. Like I feel like I definitely could not do this without your guidance and wisdom. So you have enabled me to take on this challenge, or emboldened me, I should say.
Totally delighted to sit shotgun with you on this one.
Thank you so much.
For me, cooking for big groups of people was how I learned how to cook. You know, whether that was like in co-ops in college, whether that was like in restaurants. You know, and I think as a part of that, like when I think about cooking, it's not that I don't and can't cook for just four people. It just, there's something missing.
Like I told Phoebe, cooking for a crowd, it's not exactly my thing. So I turned to a real crowd pleaser, my former colleague and fellow Oberlin College alumnus, Emil Stanek. Even though we weren't in school at the same time, Emil and I were both members of Oberlin's student-run dining co-ops. One of the co-ops, Harkness, was legendary for, well,
anarchy was really the order of the day. And so it's like you had
this giant dining room. I just wanted to hear you say it.
You have this giant dining room and like the food is being put out on like different tables and everybody's scrambling to get a plate and then like kind of crowding around like a giant wok full of like wet tofu, you know, just like tofu scramble that is like has like a, just a puddle of kind of like curry powder and water at the bottom. Somebody's like throwing knives, like not like dining knives, like throwing, like doing like circus tricks, like over to your left and like throwing
knives
into the wall. A lot of juggling. It was a really different time in cuisine for sure.
So the purpose of the Harkness digression was really to illustrate the fact that you are somebody who I've seen put yourself in harm's way when it comes to cooking. Like you've helped colleagues with like pop-ups. You've helped your colleagues with like events, with like chefs coming into the test kitchen, and you've just rolled up your sleeves, thrown on an apron, and helped them for the day. I mean, you've kind of done a bit of everything. And when I think of you, I think of this sort of like this dauntlessness, you know, around cooking.
I don't know about dauntlessness, but you know, definitely there's like a thrill for me in cooking at scale that I really like. And, you know, it also makes the cooking feel like it matters, you mm-hmm. know, when you've got like 12 people, 20 people, 40 people in your house, and that's food that you cooked. There's something very gratifying about it. And, you know, it's like, there's a lot of problem solving that goes on. You're thinking about like equipment. You're thinking about how many people can this Dutch oven feed, you mm-hmm. know? How can we make this one Dutch oven work? What do we need to add to this meal to make that Dutch oven full of braised meat feed, you know, 15 instead of 8? So yeah, that is definitely in my wheelhouse.
And I know this about you. So here was the thing. So Phoebe, she's a teacher at a private boarding school. Mm-hmm. And as part of like her end of year send-off, you know, these are kids who are just like thirsty for a home-cooked meal, right?
Right.
She wants to put together a spread, which could include a sort of central protein, but also maybe with like a meat-free side that could feed the vegetarians in the crew, but also be paired with some other things that could go well.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. I feel like this is, it sounds like, especially because this is kind of like picnic style, it sounds like it's less like one good dish and more like maybe a handful of things. And I don't think that all has to be homemade necessarily. I feel like there are ways to kind of like pad out the menu with some other things that are going to take some of the work off of her plate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
I mean, but the other thing is like when you're cooking at scale like this, it's like the stakes are high, you know, mm-hmm. like, but I feel like 99% of the time with cooking, it's like, how bad could it possibly be?
Yeah.
You know, and like short of like totally incinerating some piece of meat or like, you know, undercooking the beans in a way where they're like completely unpalatable, both things that I've seen in Oberlin co-ops, you know, you're pretty okay.
Yeah. People, generally speaking, they're so appreciative of just being fed that you cared enough to try.
Yeah. If you cook for people, you impress them, you know?
I do know, Emil. So we each went off to brainstorm a menu that would be portable, delicious, and send the students off in style. After the break, we'll share our ideas with Phoebe.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Welcome back to Dinner SOS. After a week or so, Emil and I got Phoebe back on the line to give her our recipe suggestions and a much needed pep talk.
Phoebe, I just want you to know, we're going to get there. This is going to be great.
Okay.
So, you know, you can take a breath and just know that there's no version of you cooking for them that is going to be a flop.
Thank you.
You know, for me, I mean, you know, I was looking through a lot of different recipes, you know, with kind of an eye to what does this look like when you double it, triple it, quadruple it, which is, you know, probably what you're going to be doing here.
Yes.
And not all recipes are going to lend themselves to that. So a lot of times it is just thinking about like literally how much can you fit in your oven. So the kind of like vision I'm having for this dinner is something that is a little bit something homemade and something store-bought. So what I'm kind of imagining is you have your main protein, you have a nice salad, and then you have kind of some other like dippy, snacky things to round it out. I'm kind of imagining like a Greek-y or like Mediterranean sort of like mezze spread. And that way, like what you can do is, you know, I've got two recipes I picked out for you. One is a za'atar chicken with garlicky yogurt. And the other is the Andy Baragani recipe. It's a spicy and creamy slaw. And I'll tell you why I'm thinking about these two recipes. The chicken, you know, this is made for like a 9x13, right? So that's like four whole chicken legs. And what you're going to do is, this is like one of those things that you can reliably find in any grocery store, are those big disposable aluminum roasting trays.
Yes.
So those are like about a little more than two times a 9x13. And so if you're working with two of those, if you multiply this recipe by five, I don't think you're going to have a problem getting all, like arranging all of those chicken legs in one layer in two of those. Let's talk about the recipe a little bit first. So this is like, it's chicken legs. They get kind of tossed with some whole heads of garlic that you cut in half. So those are like making direct contact with the bottom of the pan. So they're getting kind of like browned. You've got lemons and big chunks of onion. And it also has like a built-in like garlicky yogurt sauce. And then all of these kind of pan drippings are drizzled on top of that. In this case, you can serve the chicken like right out of the roasting pan. So I feel like that's what I was thinking kind of protein-wise. And then you've got this spicy and creamy slaw, which is just like a really yummy cabbage salad that has some herbs in it. And the thing that's great about that is that you can make it the day before. You can dress it the day before if you want to. It just kind of like marinates and gets, you know, the cabbage is so sturdy. It stays crunchy. That sauce is going to kind of like stay together. And then you can kind of pad out this whole spread with maybe some store-bought hummus, some store-bought baba ganoush. You can get some pita or some naan or some flatbread that if you like want to really do some extra credit, you can like warm up in the oven before you bring it over.
Just wrap it in lots of foil. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
Totally. Some stuffed grape leaves, maybe. You know, if you are going to like a Trader Joe's or like a Whole Foods or something, they might have like a little jug or like something like that. How's that sounding to you?
Two thoughts that I had. One, I'm so glad you saw my aluminum roasting pan vision, because I was so like concerned at first about how I was going to do it with the bakeware that I have. And I also love that you like really thought about a theme, because my weakness when I'm hosting dinner parties is that I will pick out dishes and make them, but they have no relation to one another whatsoever. They just taste good, but like, don't really make sense.
That can be a valid approach too, let us be clear.
Yeah. I know. The other night I made the coconutty beans and greens, and then my brother made the no need focaccia, and then dessert was a upside down rhubarb spice cake. So just like no relation, but it was really good.
Ah. That's so funny. I mean, well, listen, I'm glad you like Emile's approach, because I mean, that's really my approach that I was going to suggest too, right? Like, I think like when Emile and I were kind of chatting, you know, we talked a lot about just like de-emphasize that sort of imperative to have this like central element that everything just revolves around, you know? I was also thinking of like this kind of world of like the mezze spread, you know, where you can really work in store-bought elements seamlessly. But, you know, similarly, so I have a couple of different options here. And part of me, like maybe I've just been watching too much like Only Murders in the Building, but like going all in on dips, like only things that are like dips and spreads that you could either get store-bought pita, or you could do your own yogurt flatbreads. Unyeasted flatbread. Ooh. Oh, you like that, Emile? Let me go on. This is a technique we learned from Josh McFadden years ago, basically using yogurt, which keeps like a very supple and very tender workable dough. And it's a really fun way to make like a DIY flatbread that's like very special. Now, listen, do you want to make it for 25 people? Maybe not. And that's okay. You can get store-bought pita and just do like some dips and things yourself. Now, one dip that I did want to suggest, this is something developed by my colleague Shilpa Azgokovic, no stranger to this show. She did this creamy tahini and harissa beef. And it's like this kind of harissa inflected ground beef mixture. So it's like very like, it's not like spicy, but it's just very richly spiced. And then that has this creamy tahini sauce with it. And it's got pita chips, which you could just get those Stacy's, you know, kind of pita chips and just fold them right in there. So it's this like meat dip, you know what I mean? Like, you know how you get certain kind of styles of hummus that have like a little bit of like highly seasoned ground meat as a topper? It doesn't take that much effort, but is a really, really fun dish. And then with that, I was going to suggest, you know, maybe you try doing some like marinated and then like broiled skewers. We were talking about whether or not it would make sense for you to grill, but you could, if especially if you had metal skewers. Emil, I was thinking about the skewer story we worked on together.
Ooh, that was a fun one.
Kind of just like a smarter way to skewer, you know? And I have a recipe that also is one that Andy worked on, but it was ultimately developed by Kamal Muzawak. And it's just like a very simple marinated chicken kebab. And it's really, really, really nice. And you could just, you know, thread the marinated meat onto a metal skewer and then broil them. I also had like an onion dip, just like a slow roasted onion dip. Again, just in that world of like kind of creamy, fun spreads, something that you can do in advance, you know, just reduce down that kind of like last minute panic and like mishigas. Like you're going to have a lot of things like on your mind, you know, in terms of what you're trying to transport. To your location. But I think this is like fundamentally, you know, in terms of an approach, you know, I think would work really well.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense, especially because I'm a huge fan of filling out the meal with sort of appetizer type of things and making sure that people will get their fill on whatever they would like through that. So yeah, but I also like the sort of customizable idea of a flatbread. I don't know. It's going to be a tough decision.
Well, listen, the fact that you have a Trader Joe's near you means, you know, if, you know, depending on what they carry, like the ability to find things like baba ganoush or like a hummus, dress them up yourself. I mean, like a drizzle of olive oil, a little like finishing, just season it. Just check in like what's happening with the seasoning. A little spritz of lemon juice and then like a little sumac to finish it. Boom, you know? Right. Just totally levels it up. Don't assume that just because it's store-bought, it's like done and final.
Yeah, totally. I had made that note too, because I feel like just getting it out of the tub, you know, just like for texture is so important. You know, it's like as soon as you kind of like stir that hummus up, now it's kind of a little bit more luxurious and you can swoop it into your own container, put a little olive oil on top, a little za'atar, a little herb or something like that. You know, a little bit of the pomegranate seeds, the little arils.
Oh, yeah.
Like just something to give it a little bit of a, just, you know, make sure you touched it, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Awesome. Well, if anything comes up, you know, if you're curious about how to adapt something, how to scale something up, please just reach out, let us know. Yeah, really and truly, so cool what you're doing for your students.
Yeah, seriously.
Here to support that. You know, any teacher who ever like bothered to like hang out with us like outside of like 8:30 to 3:30 was like, whoa, like you felt like such an adult, you know?
Oh, yeah, I know. I think they're excited and hopefully the weather's good.
So we sent Phoebe off with the recipes and some pro tips for accomplishing a big transportable picnic. After the break, we'll find out how it went and what her students thought. Phoebe, welcome back.
Thank you.
I am joined once more by Emil Stanek.
Hello.
So this event was yesterday, right?
Yes, it's so fresh. So fresh.
That's great. We're going to get, so there's no benefit of like, you know, a week or two where you're like, oh yeah, that everything went pretty good, I guess.
You know? Yeah, right. The rose colored glasses are not quite on. So it's perfect. No.
Good or bad, it's all still pretty raw. What I'm mainly curious about, before I kind of kick it over to Michelle to roll us some tape for a little bit of a reveal here, what I'm just fascinated to know more than anything is did you go with the sort of decentralized approach? Like, were there multiple elements at work here?
Oh.
Would you say it's fair to say?
There were so many elements at work.
Okay.
I'd love to hear it.
Yes.
All I needed to hear was that, like, you didn't suddenly decide to make, like, I don't know, like, turkey burgers for, like, 30 people
Absolutely
outside.
Not. No.
And
no,
that
no.
was the only thing on the menu. Okay, cool. We're good. Michelle, you want to roll the tape?
So I have decided to make Emile's za'atar chicken recipe.
Yes.
I'm also going to make Chris's creamy tahini harissa beef
what?
Dip and kind of go with the theme of Mediterranean, Middle Eastern, choose your own adventure, heavy on the dips. And so I've decided to make a make your own pita station.
Oh,
wow.
Amazing.
Phoebe, that, I mean, you like, you crushed everything.
Thanks. Yeah, I did. I did everything. It's true.
Before we hear more about how it all went, Emile, could you walk us through how to make the za'atar chicken with garlic yogurt?
I sure can. Okay, so first you're going to roast your chicken legs at 325 degrees with some red onion wedges, a quartered lemon, and a couple of fat heads of garlic. Then after about 50 to 60 minutes, you're going to remove the onions, garlic, and lemon and increase the temperature to 425. And so then you're going to roast it until the skin is nice and golden brown, which is probably going to take about 10 or 15 minutes. Meanwhile, while that's happening, you can make your yogurt dip. You just grate some garlic, add some yogurt, a big pinch of salt, and a little bit of water. And then the last thing you're going to do is you're going to make the za'atar oil. So you're going to combine grated garlic, the za'atar, coriander, some lemon zest, a little bit of lime zest, and you're going to mix that all together with the chicken's pan juices. You're going to drizzle that over the chicken legs, serve it with the yogurt, and you're good to go.
Amazing. For the creamy tahini and harissa beef dip, first step is making the tahini sauce by mixing tahini, lemon juice, salt, and water until it's smooth. Then you gotta make the beef. Start by sauteing red onion, the white and light green parts of some scallions, and garlic. Then add the harissa, crushed pepper, and some water, cooking it until the harissa darkens just a bit. Then add in your ground beef and some more water, cooking until the beef is cooked through and the liquid is mostly evaporated. Take it off the heat, mix in the dark green parts of your scallions, combine the tahini sauce with the beef, top with chopped herbs and pita chips, and enjoy.
I mean, before we even get to like how it turned out, I want to know what like, what was the process like? Like
yes.
How many days were we talking?
Right. Okay. So this has been like, I'm so relieved that it's over, even though I had a great time, but I have literally been having such bad anxiety about it for like, I guess like the whole week leading up, I was just like having stress dreams that I wouldn't have enough food. And last Sunday, I think it was, I sat down and I said, okay, it's time for me to really like push is coming to shove. I need to decide what I'm doing. And so I sat with the recipes. I made the biggest grocery list you could ever imagine and just kind of organized it all. And then on Thursday, I drove up to South Bend and did my big grocery shop, hit three different stores. And then Saturday night, I made my desserts. And all day Sunday, I got up at 8 and I was cooking and preparing and getting ready up until the very last second at 5:30, which is when things happened.
Wow. So really the bulk of everything, with the exception of the dessert, happened yesterday, all of the cooking.
Yes, yes. Because I was really going back and forth with myself about what I could do ahead of time, what I couldn't. And I don't know. I'm like very concerned with freshness. And like I'm one of those people who like, if a salad is made and then sits for a few hours, especially like a Caesar, and you get that sort of nasty, like romaine, like old sandwich taste, it drives me crazy. So I was like, okay, here's my checklist. I think I can do all of this. And it worked, but I needed every single minute. So yeah,
wow, that was so impressive.
Mostly day up. Yeah.
I cannot even imagine trying to do all of that in one day. So good on you.
Thanks.
Yeah. Also just the quantities involved, right? It's like you could make all these things in one day, sure. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, you're just talking about a certain mass of food, right?
Yes.
Well, and everything impressive. Takes longer. You know,
yeah.
When
oh my
you're
gosh,
doing
yes.
that chicken times five, it's like everything just takes so much longer than it would if you were just doing one batch.
I did it times seven because I was so...
Wow.
I like did so much Googling, so much research about, you know, how many pounds of chicken per person. And I ended up having... I would say the perfect quantity, which was enough to where everybody had eaten their fill and there was still a bit left over, but not like an embarrassing amount. But we also weren't scraping the bottom of the pan on many things, wow, except for the beef dip, which vanished before my very eyes.
Really?
Mm-hmm. But really? I did only make
people
one portion.
Weren't like, what is beef dip?
I did get, what is tahini? What is arugula? What okay. is, are these lentils? Got a lot of good questions, but they dove right in. They were pretty adventurous eaters. And yeah, they loved it. I think it really, the final presentation sort of gives off like cheesy nacho vibes, like because mm-hmm. the tahini sauce kind of looks like melted Velveeta.
Yeah, no,
and
it's
so they
so creamy.
They dove right in, and I think it wasn't what they were expecting, but they seemed to really like it. So yeah, I was so relieved.
Yeah. So speaking more to like how it went, so people liked it. I mean, in terms of like how you felt the food came out, was there anything that you kind of struggled with or that didn't kind of land as gently?
Yeah. So my biggest anxiety and my biggest low point was connected to the chicken.
Uh-oh.
Because I was, okay. So I, looking back, I'm still not sure if it was the right choice, but I got really attached to this make your own pita pocket idea because I just really like the customizable aspect of it. And so I baked this chicken and then I picked it. I boned it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a labor of love.
It truly was. Yeah. And wow. So
you like these kids.
Seriously.
I care for them so much. It's a
well,
little ridiculous. Yeah. So I did that. Then I threw it into the crock pot and put that in the fridge because I was too scared it wouldn't get done in time. So I made it in the morning and then took the giant crock pot to the dinner and warmed it up there. The crock pot was taking a little while to heat it up. And the kids were like leaning over the table, like, so anxious to start eating. So I said, if you guys don't mind lukewarm chicken in your pita pockets, please have at it. And then the food just vanished. So, you know, it turned out great and they really liked it. In fact, I got the compliment that it was very aesthetic, the food choices were, which I think is a huge compliment. But it was like, that was definitely my biggest obstacle, my hurdle to jump over.
Phoebe, you are never going to be stressed out about Thanksgiving again.
I know. The six-person dinner party now, that's a breeze. I mean, I could do that just so off the cuff.
It's amazing how quickly that happens. It's like you do a couple of like big events and then you're like, it actually makes it easier to cook for yes. smaller groups of people because you're like, oh yeah, I can do this. No problem. Just give me a couple of hours and we're all set.
Wow. This is huge. What a win for you, honestly, that you were able to make this event happen. I mean, I wish you hadn't, you know, been quite so stressed about it, but whatever, that's the process. You dove in, you know, and I think clearly like it meant a lot for the students.
Yeah, they were very happy and the chance to get a little ways off campus and, you know, just, I was so wrapped up in everything that I forgot to like give a tearful speech. So that's too bad. But I sent him an email afterwards. So that works.
Well, that's the nice thing is like, you know, you made all this food, like, you know, put out this lovingly prepared spread. And I feel like that is a speech unto yeah. itself, you know?
Yeah, so true. Best thing I'll never do again. But I do think, that if I had some help, maybe a couple kitchen mates, then I would willingly dive back in for sure.
Oh, Emil, I can't even believe we didn't address this head on, like in our first call with Phoebe.
Oh, about
like
help.
You need to have a buddy. You can do anything with a buddy.
As soon as we got off the call, I was like, oh, I wish we had said, find somebody to
find
do this with
anyone.
You. Like, because it's so much when it's just one set of hands, even having somebody to like wash herbs or just hang yes. out with you is like, makes that kind of thing so much easier.
Yes.
Dinner SOS fail. I can't believe it.
I know.
I've never been so ashamed. Buddy system. Every
buddy
time.
System.
That could have just been one of the recipes was you need a buddy.
Seriously. Just, yeah.
Even like a dog would have helped. Just emotional support.
Yes, absolutely.
All things considered, it sounds like the picnic was a resounding success. But here with the on-the-ground verdict is Phoebe's student, Kingsley. How did she do, Kingsley?
I give it a 10 out of 10. I really enjoyed the chicken and especially the beef dip, and it was really good.
You know, the thing that I think is amazing is that this is a student that your time together is coming to a close. So there's no like ulterior motive there. He's not like, you know, is she going to help me out or is she going to give me like, you
grades
know,
are
some
in.
Kind of recommendation? Grades are in.
Oh, yeah.
And still a 10 out of 10.
We're always looking for new callers, and the more specific and unsolvable your problem, the better. As we head into summer, I'm looking for a challenge. Give me your worst. If you have a dinner emergency on your hands, write to us at dinnersos@bonappetit.com or leave us a voice message at 212-286-SOS1. That's 212-286-7071. You can find the recipes featured on today's episode, creamy tahini and harissa beef, za'atar chicken and garlicky yogurt, spicy and creamy slaw, slow roasted onion dip, and grilled chicken skewers with thyme on the new Epicurious app brought to you by Condé Nast. Just search Epicurious in the App Store and download today. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating and review on your podcast app of choice and hit that follow button so you never miss an episode. Dinner SOS is a Condé Nast Entertainment original podcast. I'm your host, Chris Morocco. My co-host this week is Emil Stanek. Our producer is Michelle O'Brien. Peyton Hayes is our associate producer. Leah Kasher is our assistant producer. Jake Loomis is our studio engineer. Amar Lal mixed this episode. We'll be back in a couple weeks with a recording of our first ever live show featuring Padma Lakshmi, Marcus Samuelson, and Ruth Reichel. Thanks for listening and happy cooking. Anybody have a Samsung dryer out there? No? Just me? Okay.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.